Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I think that I, for a long time, had this kind of problematic idea that that in Indonesia, the goal was to snag a rich white man, and that was the culture, that was what you did. Mm. When I lived in Vietnam, you know, just get these like average men that would go over there and kind of fall backwards into a fantastic job, and women were falling over themselves to be with them. And what does that do to your mind when you go over to a country where you're making 100 times the salary of the locals, and all of these aspects of yourself are being reinforced by the broader culture and society? What does that do to your head?
We're your hosts, Julie
and Sarade. We travelled around Aotearoa with our soundie Joey, meeting immigrant whānau, listening to stories and discovering what is said or not said between different generations.
These stories warmed our hearts and broke our hearts. And over this series, we invite you two to listen in on conversations with my immigrant parents. This episode, we're in Whangarei with Avi and her daughter Chinta and Ava and her daughter Cindy. Avi and Ava are sisters, and they came to Aotearoa from Indonesia. Avi came first in 1995 and settled in Whangarei, which is where her husband Tim is from, and Ava came later in 2003 with her husband Colin. Colin and Tim were friends from high school, both Apakia, and both ended up working in Indonesia for some time. The two of them marrying sisters is a pretty interesting part of this conversation.
Avi's daughter Chinta is 23 and Ava's daughter Cindy is 26. Both of them are the oldest in their families. Chinta has a younger sister called Amy, and Cindy has a younger brother, Tom. In the episode, you'll hear Chinta referring to her aunt Ava as Tevava, and Cindy referring to her aunt Avi as Tanta Afi. Sundanese and Bahasa words for big sister and auntie, respectively.
I'm Afi, and my daughter is Chinta Yasmin Demrel. We name her Chinta because Chinta means love. It sounds beautiful. I don't really know what you do, but you are. But I know that Chinta loves community and loves to help people and loves art, which I do like as well. Yeah.
My name is Chinta, and this is my mom, Avi Nur Hidayat. Is that Hidayati? Yeah. She is the ultimate provider. Every time anyone comes over, it's like a banquet of random delights. and yeah, just a very generous, beautiful goddess woman.
I'm Eva. This is my daughter, Cindy. Her name is Cynthia Annette Dewi Korn. She didn't have names for... 6 weeks in the hospital. So, because we tried to find really good names for her. She's like a beautiful daughter, but sometimes cranky. I always miss her a lot. Every time she comes here, I just like wanting to cuddle her. But I'm so proud of her.
I'm Cindy, and this is my mom, Eva Nurhayati Chinta Dewi. Yeah. She's the oldest of five siblings. She carries the weight of that beautifully and gracefully. She's an angel. I think I should stop now. I'm already crying.
Avi starts the conversation off by describing how Ava's husband, Colin, introduced her to her future husband, Tim.
I met Tim in Indonesia when he came to see Ava's husband, Colin, in 1994. At the time, I was working for Colin, casually. When we finished the project, Colin asked me to accompany Tim travel from Java to Bali. We just clicked straight, not straight away, but I just felt safe. So I came here in 1995, and then he proposed to me within a month. I didn't tell.
Yeah.
When I was here, and I didn't tell my parents, like I that I was living with him, and I was 27 at the time, 26. I asked him if he wanted to marry me, he should come to Indonesia to propose me, which he did, and then helped by Colin, because he knows Colin knew Tim well, and that Tim was not an expatriate in Indonesia, you know, like when you are an expatriate, some of them like play with women in Indonesia. My dad, we call him Babab approved. It was quite hard, but actually Colin and Eva's marriage 2 years before opened up for me. We got married 96, and then I straight away moved here. I've been, in Whangarei since 95, really. And I love it here. Got children
here. Not an ad for Whangarei.
How about you, Tivava? Was it always an option, or like had you already decided that you were going to end up moving to New Zealand? Or
no, I never known when I would go at the time, but I really wanted to live in overseas like that.
Did you both know that the plan was for you to both be in New Zealand eventually? No. That was not part of
not
your decision making.
No, it was.
I didn't know. I thought it was
planned.
All.
It's always felt very planned to me.
I don't think so.
Yeah, it was.
I thought it was manufactured.
It was for you.
Yeah, for me.
Oh, for you.
For me, it
not
was.
Not for me.
No, for me, okay. It was planned by Colin because he wanted me to have a friend here in New Zealand. He was trying to matchmaking team with whoever that
various
he could,
women.
Yeah.
Various women in Indonesia. Yeah.
And then when Tim came there and Cindy just born, and they had really good holiday, which is like I was so envy. And then every day, Colin, do you know fax machine? So, he sent fax
letter
to me, and I think it's working.
It's
nearly
God.
Every day.
I kind of always thought that Dad kind of like made that up, but
no, it was true because
didn't know. But the fax,
no. He faxed me every day.
Yeah, he really manufactured.
You know, they did every day always call me.
Yeah.
Like, this is because you were just born too.
Yeah.
So, how's Cindy? And then Ray, Tim and Avi, I think it's working, something like that. So, it was all planned. But luckily, it's Avi got married to Tim.
Very interesting way that this whole extended family came about.
Yeah, yes. We were also really interested in Avi's use of the word expatriate. So in this next part, the family discuss some of the power imbalances that come about when white men travel to non-white countries, particularly Southeast Asian countries, in pursuit of women.
I worked for a magazine for a little bit, translating articles. And in Jakarta, really is my exposed to expatriates foreigners who work in Indonesia. I don't have any relationship, you know, like personal relationship with them.
You can see.
Heard from lots of people as well. We knew people also who dated these expatriates. And we know that these expatriates are already married. That's when Colin said, like, you know, Tim, it's not like the
expat.
Not an expat, like some expat in Indonesia who uses women to
have a foreign wife or foreign relations.
Foreign relations,
What do you mean foreign relations? For fun. Sometimes for fun.
But it's like
They're disposable.
For some women in there, they are using the expat to get the money. But I can see it from the two different source. Like the expats wants to have fun time with the woman there, and the other source, the woman wants to take advantage for having that one, because we have it in here too, like Indonesian woman here like that too.
You mean like doing kind of sex work?
Just trying
to hound them for money. I mean, you get that, like, whenever we go over walking on the street and with Dad, it's like, everyone's kind of coming up and crowding around Dad because they're like, oh, rich white man.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, like, fair enough.
I think that I, for a long time, had this kind of problematic idea that in Indonesia, it was like the goal was to snag a rich white man, and that was like the culture, that was what you did. I think I brought it up with you a couple of years ago and you were like, no, that's not how we all think. When I lived in Vietnam, I mean, I met some of the best people I've ever met there, but I also met some of the worst white men I've ever met. You know, just get these like average men that would go over there and kind of fall backwards into a fantastic job, and women were falling over themselves to be with them, and they would kind of have this idea of like, oh, well, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't my fault that I wasn't successful in my home country. It was everyone else, because look at me now. Yeah. What does that do to your mind when you go over to a country where you're making 100 times the salary of the locals, and all of these aspects of yourself are being reinforced by the broader culture and society? What does that do to your head?
Everyone's kind of turning to you as this, like, as someone who's kind of higher, or, you know, has more power because of their money.
Like you said, you have these expats, these white expats that go over and have this like really inflated sense of their own importance because it's been reinforced by these broader aspects.
It was quite hard for me because Colin was a boss there. So when we tried to get married, everyone like, oh, you married boss. Yeah, so what? I didn't marry boss.
That wasn't the intention to marry the boss.
No, I didn't. So did people think that you were like a trophy wife? Or
Yes, something like that. So
I had experience like when you were little, we went to the mountain in Indonesia. I was carrying you and walk with him, and these people were, you know, calling me, what do you call it? You know, like cheap.
Oh.
Yeah. I just ignored that because I'm not like that.
I feel like that's really hard listening to Ava say that when she married Colin, people, you know, gave her flack about marrying the boss. It seems like so much of the judgment about both Ava and Avi's relationship ended up falling on their shoulders, like being called a trophy wife, being called cheap. Like, it's not their responsibility. They're not to be held account for anything.
And it's also interesting that these values or beliefs are internalized in a way. You can kind of hear that also in the way they describe other women. When we hear that all these privileged white men are going to Southeast Asian countries where they have so much wealth compared to the locals and starting relationships with the women there, that we have one view of the power dynamics there. And it's interesting that Avi and Ava talk about how the women are also trying to get something out of it.
Yeah.
And that also reflects in how they as women have been judged in their relationships with black men as well.
Yes.
So it's like a completely circular. Hear you. And it's also, we're like very conscious of how Chinta and Cindy seem to have different views.
I also think that it's particularly relevant for Chinta and Cindy because they, as Asian women, as mixed Asian women, deal with a lot of fetishization and a lot of exoticism themselves, which Chinta continues in this next part of the podcast.
I wouldn't do this now, but like I remember wearing shorts and stuff in Jakarta and just being like, oh, why are all these men staring at me kind of thing and getting really frustrated about that. But now, like now I wouldn't do that. I'd be a lot more respectful. But then, you know, seeing the treatment that white men get in those places and seeing the way that Dad got kind of fawned over was like, now kind of reflecting on it is like quite disturbing because it's made me kind of think like, oh, did Dad take advantage or anything like that? And I know that that's not true,
not at
but
all.
Like, and I know that Dad's of the white men, he's probably a good one. But it definitely has kind of made me think about that European influence over there and how much it's kind of shifted the perception of women. I think in terms of my own relationships, for a long time, I think I was very much like wanted to assimilate, was just attracted to white people. But now I'm like, I'm quite the opposite. I mean, like, I'll go, like, attracted to whoever I'm attracted to, but, like, I'm a lot more wary of white people, I think. And that's because I've seen a lot of terrible shit that they've done.
But not all. Like
no, not, no, no, not all. But, like, I think that there is a superiority complex and I've sensed it in some relationships in the way that people talk to me, or I think that I've definitely felt, and this is something I've kind of recently come to, is that growing up, I think that I was very much fetishized by a lot of people, like in school, just being like, oh, you're very exotic or you're different, being told that I was very beautiful and stuff. And that, like, at the time I was like, oh, cool. And, you know, like I had lots of boyfriends and stuff. But then now looking back on it, I was like, oh, that kind of period started when I was very young. And it wasn't something that was taught to me by you or Dad, but it was something that I was like very much influenced by my schooling here and the perception of me.
Mm. Part of growing up.
Yeah, definitely. But I think that there was like an essence of like, oh, you're different.
Yeah, different. You're interesting.
So I mean, when we were in Bali, Indonesians attracted to you, like they straight away look at you and you, Chinta and Cindy, they're just,
they adore mix.
I like the mix look.
Look.
I don't know if you do this, Chin, but if I've ever date a white man, I always ask how many of your ex-girlfriends are Asian. Because there's have been one or two where they've been like, oh, all of them, and I've been like, ooh no.
Like I don't want to, like,
it makes me feel like I'm part of a collection. And it's more common than you think.
Definitely.
I'm quite surprised because I never really think about that, that you really heard that you are being half Asian, something like that.
Oh no, I'm not hurt by it. No. I'm incredibly proud of my culture and of you and of being half Indonesian. I'm incredibly proud of it. It's more that I don't trust other people's perceptions of it, which is really sad. It's something that I'm very wary of with white men in particular, because I know how Asian women are fetishized in our culture, and it's happened to me my whole, from a teenager.
Is this because of, like, I don't understand, like, even the younger, like, not, not, oh, what's the name? intermediate as well? Just thinking like that, like where do they learn from fantasizing?
They learn it from porn. They learn it from the wider culture.
Yeah.
They repeat things that they've heard from adults.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, like the history of Asian women being fetishized is like long and storied, and I haven't done enough research on it recently to be able to talk about it now.
When I was in intermediate, because I started dating people very early, and I think that that is, I know now. But there's two things, like seeing just how beautiful yours and dad's relationship was, I think that that was something that I was always very much like, oh my God, I want to have a relationship like that.
Mm.
I don't know, like I saw a lot of kind of belittling of Asian women and the way that a lot of like ignorant people kind of spoke to them really slowly. And I saw this happening to you sometimes with people like, and I know that for you it's like kind of helpful, but on the other end is a like Pakeha Indonesian seeing my mum being talked to very slowly in a way that's like she's not stupid. Like you're very intelligent and you know how to speak English really well. So seeing that kind of downplayed has really kind of built up my resentment there. You know, hearing stuff like, oh, you're pretty hot for an Asian and everything like that. And it's just like, oh, yeah, you know, like, just, oh.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, especially in high school, to other people, it seemed to be a really important part of my personhood was that I was Asian.
Yeah.
My nickname was like Cindy the Asian, and I was okay with that because... Yeah. It felt okay. But I also think that our mums are objectively beautiful.
Mm.
But I also think that there was a big focus on their beauty.
And
that they're beautiful and exotic. And
from who, though?
Like from friends, from people in general, from my dad. Not in a, you know, he's saying it because, you know, I have a beautiful wife.
Mm.
But I think that the focus on that really kind of primed me to be like, well, yes, I'm beautiful because I'm exotic.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, this is an asset to me. And
I felt that as well. I said to Babab, I said, oh, don't say that. Because, I don't want them to see themselves being, you know, like only it's beautiful. It's only beautiful.
Yeah.
And Babab said, well, that's the fact. And I cannot say anything else, you know, like, I mean, it's his right to say that, but, you know, like, I didn't want you to, like, to
be
think
the first
that that's,
thing.
Yeah.
And I think, like, growing up, people would, it was the first thing that people would say.
Mm.
Yes, yeah. Especially back home in Indonesia as well.
Chantik.
You are Chantik, because you are a mixed,
because we're mixed.
Race, yeah, and then people drawn onto you.
This is such a dense part of the podcast. I feel like there's so much explored in that section and so much to unpick. Yeah, I almost don't know where to start, but I really resonate with lots of these things that were brought up. This discussion around beauty being a focus and beauty being a thing that is specified about a person is interesting also because it comes from Ava and Avi's dad as well.
Yeah.
And they can recognise that they didn't want their daughters to be called only beautiful.
Yeah, I think you and I have talked about the privilege of beauty that mixed race babies have had, all mixed with white babies.
Yeah.
We've talked about how I love babies with light eyes.
Me criticising Julie every time she says something like this.
I don't say it like that.
No, you don't.
Love babies
you don't.
Have light eyes, which is not, it happens. It's me internalizing white standards of beauty.
Yeah.
Yeah, I admit it.
We have to be so conscious of it because we've internalized this.
Yeah. And it's not that we've internalized it as individuals, like our entire communities, cultures, groups.
Yes. You know, you constantly have to try and work against it and remind yourself and like rejig that in your brain because it's so insidious and it's so everywhere.
And it does actually just uphold white supremacy by saying this is the pinnacle of what you want to be.
Chinta and Cindy experience this in New Zealand, and they also experience it back in Indonesia.
Mm.
And it's just another reminder that nowhere in the world is exempt from Eurocentric standards of beauty, which is obviously why colorism is so prevalent and so horrible.
Mm.
Particularly relevant to this is the way that Asian women specifically are fetishized and exoticized. And I hate hearing about it. It is hard to listen to how early some of these standards of beauty and standards of like what makes us useful and worthwhile as women, how early that starts. I definitely felt like some of that praise that gets heaped onto kids that are half white, and it like always made me really uncomfortable and feel gross and sort of...
You can see how the fetishization of people who are mixed with white links into the fetishization of women when they're talking about how they were approached even when they were young and starting to find relationships. And what Cindy says about being part of a collection of Asian girlfriends. But like when you and I heard that, we were like, this rings true.
Yeah, because we know white men who do that.
I've just been asked out by white men, and when I've said no, and then just seen that the next girlfriend they get is Asian, and I'm always like, oh, what was that?
Oh my gosh. It's such an instant way of dehumanizing someone by identifying them by race only, deciding that that is something that's sexually attractive, picking that as the brand that you want. Also, the amount of analysing that we're doing about this, that white men are not doing this level of analysis.
True. Such a good point. What is all this admin and
why are we unpicking your problems? It's because we're dealing with the catastrophes that come as a result of it. It's really interesting listening to Cindy and Chinta unpack all this stuff because it's so relevant to them and they've dealt with it for such a long time. They haven't talked to their mums about some of these things. Yeah, I just think this is such an important, interesting discussion.
And really complex given how their families and lives began.
Yes, completely.
So this next part of the discussion sees Chinta and Cindy reflecting on what they were and weren't able to tell their mums as kids. Avi starts us off by sharing some of her fears as a mother when Chinta started getting older.
I was so scared when Chinta you had your first relationship.
Mm.
And then it is something that our parents talk to us about the relationship when we were younger. And when you first had your relationship, like, I still thought like, oh, you are just, little girls, and then I didn't think that you would go that far. And then Tim just said like, oh, you just put you into
contraceptive,
but you were still young. And I said, no, she has to wait, we are the parents, you have to wait until you are 16.
Consent.
I didn't consent you to have that. And then of course I didn't know what you were doing outside then. I talked to you.
What was that conversation between you two? What did you come to talk to mum about?
I think you came to me and tell me about Cindy first.
Yeah.
Because you were all there.
I was lost. I was a lost cause.
Yeah, because you were all there. And then
We just stopped. We didn't have any solution or something.
No, because we couldn't do anything.
Yeah, we just say what our feeling, how sad and something like that. But we didn't have any solution.
Solutions,
it's just
it's
come out by itself. Like, you are really responsible. What I heard from that, because I couldn't talk to you. I'm so scared.
I couldn't talk to you. I was so scared.
Yeah, I was the same.
I think I let go because Cinta, live here. It's something that it's a no-no in Indonesia. Mm-hmm. And then you live here, you have the right as well. I mean, I felt sad because I felt scared for you.
If something happened.
For your safety. Like, I didn't have that conversation with you. I was just behind, like I was hiding in the bedroom a night. Like, I was just crying.
Did you feel like you had failed to protect us?
Yeah, I felt like that. I felt like that.
And is that because for, like, compared to in Indonesia, we started, like, having interest in boys and stuff, like, a lot earlier than
No. Can I?
Yeah.
She had her boyfriend, like, quite young, like 13, 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And then, but I chose not to have.
But we were like open. It's like, you know, Indonesian, if you have friends, just come to the house and talk and like socialize or something like that. But in here, I don't know, they have their own rule. You don't really visit the parents.
Right, was like this, like, extra, like, social rules that you didn't know
about.
So
the boyfriends in Indonesia come to the girl's house and then they associate with the parents.
Straight away.
Yeah, straight. Parents, we know that.
The parents will check out, like, is this good boy or good girl or something like that sometimes.
I feel like living here, it's also a different rule, whether it is right to check or...
Yeah, you just had no framework for how to have that conversation with us.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember quite vividly, I was maybe 16, so Cinta would have been 12 or 13. Kanta, Afi, and I think you, Mama, and me sitting around the kitchen table, and we were talking. Afi said something like, oh, you know, it's really hard. It's really hard for us when you guys start growing up and, you know, having sex and all of these. It's really hard for us. And I remember saying, probably insensitively, but I said, well, it's hard for us. And I said, like, you know, Chinta's really going through something right now and she needs you too. So it's just really interesting to hear that there's this, like, kind of like gap, this distance between both parties feeling like they really needed to talk to each other, but we couldn't.
But didn't know how to.
And I remember, because I did not handle my first time very well, I snuck out of the house. Mom came and got me. Really bad. But I remember really wanting to talk to you, but I couldn't because I'd never seen you that disappointed with me. And I went to Dad because Dad's always been like very open, very sex positive, which I'm really, really grateful for because I think that it's one of the things I'm most grateful for. But I remember, like, you know, my friends were like, oh, you talk to your dad about that stuff? Like, how do you do that? I was like, well, I can't talk to my mum about it because there's no, she can't.
Different.
Yeah, we can't do it. there's no bridge.
Looking back on it now, like, I wouldn't change it, but I also look at my 12-year-old self and I'm like, I just didn't know what was appropriate to talk to you about. I think that's why it fell upon myself to try and figure things out by myself and go, you know, like not talk to you guys about it, go behind your backs and things like that and kind of sneak around about it because I was just so scared of disappointing you. Like, even though I know that I kind of already had, it was just like, no, but I'm growing up.
So do you feel like that was your biggest challenge as mothers when we were growing up?
It's not only that, a lot of challenges as a mother, a lot of them, but you decide what you feel right, like that. But my part now is just like, when you come, I just cuddle you. that's what makes me happy.
Even though it was quite hard, not being able to have conversations with you. I think that I learned a lot by myself. Mm. And now I know, you know, like mm-hmm. I don't necessarily look back on those experiences as a mistake.
Yeah.
I think that it's versed me quite well in terms of redefining my boundaries, mm-hmm. which I think that it's like for a lot of women, it's so important that for us to learn how to set our boundaries with people. I don't place any blame on you for that time at all. Like, I think that a whole lot of circumstances led up to that, and it wasn't you.
I was just going to say I relate to what Chinta was saying about like kind of the sneaking around behind Avi's back and not being able to talk to your mum about relationship stuff when you're a teenager, but also not knowing how much of that is just like regular teen angsty stuff, not wanting to talk to your family, and what's actually influenced by this cultural generational disconnection or perception that your parents might share different worldviews about things like sex and dating. But yep. I feel like Chinta's reached a really good resolution point in her life about it.
I love what she said about she doesn't look at those experiences as a mistake because she's thinking about what it taught her. Very impressive place to be. Yeah, I think it's really cool that Chinta and Cindy had each other in the way that they did, because obviously that's something that a lot of migrant families lack, is that extended family network. You know, if you've left lots of cousins and grandparents and aunties and uncles back home where you came from, then you miss out on so much of that interaction. But Chinta and Cindy had that, and they had that in a really strong, cool way. So Indonesia is, of course, a Muslim-majority country, and here Chinta starts a discussion off about how Islam has continued to be a presence in their lives.
Oh, it's something that I've been thinking about recently, because one of your brothers is very strongly Muslim. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I've just been thinking recently about, like, if I were to go back and try and learn from the family, like, what their opinions of me would be as as quite a sex-positive, bisexual, outspoken woman, you know? Like, making a face.
I don't know about that.
No, I don't think they will accept it.
They won't accept you, but they won't force you to do something else as well.
No, they will. I think, They won't say it to you, they will say it to us.
Put the responsibility on you. I think I've been thinking about that a lot recently, especially because I'm, you know, quite open on my Instagram and things like that, and you've kind of warned me about family members seeing that. It makes me feel guilty, because it makes me feel like I've put a family shame on you with a family in Indonesia, and that, I don't know, do you feel that as well? Like, not necessarily that you have shame about me and who I am, but that will have shifted your relationship with your family.
They will tell me off maybe and ask, you know, to threaten you or whatever. Mm. They wouldn't shame me. Mm. I wouldn't say that. They wouldn't cut the relationship with me.
Do you think that has shifted since Babab and Nini passed away?
No.
There's still the same pressure.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Same pressure. Yeah. Mm. One of the things that when I went back home after, I don't know, 5-6 years, didn't go home. And then I met my high school friends again. And then they know that I married foreigners. They knew that we married like as Muslim, and then they asked question like openly, like, do you pray? Does Tim pray? Like, do you teach your kids? It is probably for people there, it's, you know, something that is commonly
normal
or normal. But for me, it's not their business anymore. But I didn't say that to them, because like,
you're a foreigner anyway there now.
I said, not really, you know, like, oh, you should do this. And everyone is telling me, like, you have to teach your, your children Muslim way,
pray.
Because, like, I mean, I'm a Muslim, but I don't practice. I used to. I changed not because I move here, because I just think I just need to be kind to other people. Like, I don't have
and
to.
And that's the bottom line of rather than the other restrictions and things like that.
That's why I didn't teach you that.
Yeah, looking five times pray, I was like, keep thinking, like, it's just a break. When you're
busy
working and busy, have a break 5 minutes and do the stretch or something. It's that 5 times Muslim prayer is just like a stretch, like making your body work like that. So not sitting all the time like that. Mm. It's only 5 minutes if you can do that. I don't do that now, but I'm like keep thinking every day. What is the purpose of that praying, and what is the purpose of the fasting and other things? It's just like try to make sense everything that Muslim try to tell us like that.
So, but in your own way, how it serves you, rather than by a bunch of kind of restrictions or rules.
I feel really blessed to have Afi here. If she's not here, maybe I would have a best friend or something, but it will be different.
Yeah.
Just different how we talk, how we let go our feelings, or it's everything different. That's what your dad plan, which is like really, really for me, yes, because that's his plan to do that. So it's like really blessed for me. Yeah.
I mean, I feel the same as well to have you here. Like I mean, when you first came here, Cindy was little. I was so happy. Like for us, it's almost like normal to have another family living in the same house. We did that as well with other family.
I felt guilty with Tim though. I felt like, oh,
he got used to it.
Did Tim accept it or not?
No, he got used to it.
Dad's pretty chill.
Yeah. Otherwise, we wouldn't accept the other family as well, you know. Mm. Having Eva here also helped me grow up. I can tell her lots of things, share with her lots of things, and that's why we do it together. And I remember when Eva got married, I felt so sad because that means she wouldn't sleep in our shared bedroom anymore.
I feel like I've watched you, Mama, and Tanta Afi grow together. We can almost see the back and forth where you've gone to each other and talked about something and come back with a different view or more support.
I've definitely seen just how much support having Tivava here for you, Mum, has provided. And like I think about it quite a lot in terms of same thing, like on Dad's side of the family, it's quite distant. And so,
in comparison.
Yeah. And like, it's always like quite joyful when you're together.
Yeah.
And it feels like because you can speak Bahasa to each other, like for our birthdays and things like that, like cooking nasi kuning and that whole kind of ritual is still a part of your lives. And I think that seeing the relationship between the two of you has been really beautiful in terms of like how close you can be to a sibling.
Yeah.
And also like how intertwined and how like communal a family can be. Cause I know that in a lot of other families, it's like, it can be quite secluded or everyone kind of has their own biz, but it feels like everything is very much shared and like, it's really nice to grow up in that kind of communal environment. And that's definitely influence the way that I kind of run my flat or like, you know, look after the people in my in my space. Yeah.
It really feels like you two are at the center of this, like,
yeah,
of
yeah.
this web, this community, this network is what I'm trying to say. You're the center of this network.
One of the reasons we wanted to have this family on the podcast was because we thought that it was really unique the way that these two families kind of grew their lives and journeys in parallel to one another. And I really like hearing about how Chinta sees their extended family as like a communal lifestyle where everything is shared, and it's not the traditional like nuclear family, which a lot of, like you kind of said before, a lot of immigrants would have because they are separated from the rest of their families here.
I like when Cindy says that when her mum goes and talks to Avi, that she comes back with like a different view. That's so nice. It's like Cindy and Chinta can just see that their mums give each other so much.
So much support.
Yeah.
That sisterly bond is real strong. And for the last part of the podcast, Ava starts off the family's reflections on what or where home is for them.
Yeah, this is my home now, New Zealand, Whangarei. If I go back to Indonesia, I don't know what to do, and I don't really know where should I live or what should I get connected. We have three brothers, but they have their own family. So my first plan before, if I'm getting old, I wanted to go back to Indonesia, have retirement there and have people helping me getting older or something. But I don't know now. I think my home is here now. So, yeah.
And your mum have talked about getting a house together when you're older.
Yes.
Yeah.
A flat, a granny flat together, side by side. Whangarei is my home now. I'm happy here. But I never thought like I would go back to Indonesia, knowing that Chinta and Amy are here. And once we talk about, like, we have to decide what to do with my body if I if I died, because like it will be in Muslim way, but we still haven't had that deep conversation. But yeah, I like it here. Not that everything is easy here, but we get used to be doing things our way rather than there. And once we get back home, we will need to have some help maybe. And then also, yeah, the traffic and stuff like that. Not that it is not beautiful there. Like, we would like to have long holiday there, but it's convenient more than in Indonesia. How about you, Chin?
I think that this house, like Turukaka Coast, definitely feels like home for me. It's weird because I always used to dog on people who wanted to retire in Whangarei. but now I'm like, oh, actually, like, it's such a beautiful place.
Precious.
And what you guys have kind of created here in terms of your own communities. And because I used to always think that Whangarei never had anything to do.
Yes, both of you say that.
Yeah, but seeing the amount of stuff that,
that you do.
It was like, oh, actually, like if I did decide to ever come back here and live
you
here
can do
again,
something.
I can make that whatever I want it to be.
I don't think I'm necessarily as attached to Whangarei in this area. I think home will always be for me wherever these two families have created their communities. I think that's a stronger association
than the place
itself. I feel like I have a little bit of a complicated relationship with this town.
If when I go to Indonesia, you will be
then that will have to become home.
This is a nice end. Wherever her mum is, that's home.
Yeah.
That's cute.
Well, not even just wherever her mum is, but where these two families are. Because that's even they're cuter. So interwoven.
Yeah.
And I love the image of Avi and Ava retiring together in a little granny flat together.
Just two sisters and best friends.
Two gals.
So cute. Thank you to Avi, Ava, Chinta and Cindy for reaching out to us and for sharing your unique experiences on this podcast. We appreciate that you unraveled some really multi-layered topics here, and we just think this is going to resonate with so many people. You can check out photos and videos of all our families on Facebook at Where Are You From Really, Instagram at Combos With My, and on RNZ's website. Conversations with My Immigrant Parents was created, produced and directed by Julie Zhu and Sarai De Silva. Location recording by Joey Siasoko. Studio recording by Jill Eva Craig at The Secret Beehive. And sound edited and mixed by Emmy Pagoni.
Our cover image is illustrated by Ngā Mutane Jones at Miss Memo and designed by Sonia Milford. A huge thanks also to Kay Elmers and Tim Burnell from RNZ Commissioning. Conversations with My Immigrant Parents was made possible by the RNZ NZ On Air Innovation Fund. He ko nei ipurangi tēnei ma te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.